Lily Lake in Rockwood Park is currently closed for swimming due to relatively high concentrations of E. coli bacteria having been found in a recent test. The city announced the closure last week, and while warning signs have been posted, further testing is being carried out. This comes after warnings of the increased prevalence of cyanobacteria, or blue-green algae, in the province's waterways. Roxanne McKinnon, Executive Director of Atlantic Coastal Action Programme, ACAP, St John, an environmental non-profit, spoke about the health risks associated with both E. coli and cyanobacteria, as well as other contaminants of the province's waterways. She also provided information about precautions that swimmers and dog owners in particular should take to minimise exposure to contaminants.
So it's a safety precaution that they put in place because the bacteria level is getting high, and if someone were to swim with open wounds or ingest it, they could potentially have a lot of E. coli in their systems, and that doesn't do great things for us human. It's naturally part of our gut, but you don't want to ingest it. It can have like varying health effects from, you know, like just gastrointestinal problems to like if you think back to like the Walkerton disaster, can actually cause death in humans. So E. coli is a bacteria. It's naturally found in the gut of warm-blooded animals, so humans and mammals. It's also common in geese. So a lot of our E. coli problems in freshwater environments isn't necessarily to do with human impacts. It can also come from wildlife. So it kind of depends on where the water body is, where those impacts could be. Like Marsh Creek, for example, has high E. coli levels very frequently, most likely more attributed to human influences than solely wildlife, whereas like Lily Lake, for example, because there's not many homes or there's no stormwater being inflowed into that lake, is most likely probably due to wildlife. So it kind of grows in these warm, still conditions. There's many ways that humans can kind of influence this. Being mindful of what's happening during rain events is when we see a lot of stuff washing off the land. So making sure if you aren't on city infrastructure that you have an up-to-date and working septic system, for example. You're picking up after your dog. That is also a really important one. Dogs are mammals, so they also have E. coli in their gut. So that's not being washed into a stream later during a rain event. And then just being mindful of our stormwater. So what's coming off of your property. That's for E. coli or for nutrients. Both of those things are really important in our waterways and making sure we're keeping them in check. So if you know you're using fertilizers on your lawn, to make sure that you are limiting the fertilizer use, you're not fertilizing right before a rain event. If you happen to have waterfront property, making sure that you're keeping a nice healthy riparian buffer next to the waterway so those nutrients and bacteria can naturally be uptake by the plants before they actually go into our waterways, to kind of just be mindful of our runoff is really the main thing.
What other health risks can be encountered through contamination through human activity?
E. coli is one of the ones that we see the most often when we see waterways shut down for swimming. Stormwater inflows are also something that we see a lot, which don't necessarily always bring E. coli, but bring nutrients and things that are fueling other sorts of bacteria and algae in our water bodies. So ensuring that we are paying attention to kind of the water coming off of our property and trying to keep that in a healthy environment. And that's where riparian areas or the area next to a stream become really important, is making sure that they are vegetated and healthy so that they can help mitigate some of those runoff issues before they actually deposit into a stream. We're seeing improvements already in some of our historic waterways as industrial regulations have kind of clampered down on what they can release. But we do still in St. John have historic contaminated areas that were from previous industries decades ago. So there's definitely still work to be done and still trying to understand all of those impacts. Like I already mentioned Marsh Creek to do with E. coli, but Marsh Creek also has legacy creosote contamination from the early 1800s, early 1900s that is still in the creek today. Even though some of the regulations are changing and what we're seeing impact-wise might not be as impactful as it was 100 years ago, but we're still dealing with those issues of 100 years ago. So being very mindful of making sure that regulations are being met is really important to protect our water quality. As we've seen a lot in our region, a lot of our industry is right next to water bodies, which is not necessarily the most ideal location, which a lot of the industry will also admit is not the most ideal location. As we continue to make sure the water quality coming out of the industry is of good quality, we also need to think about what legacy contaminations we need to deal with and making sure that we're moving those things forward so that our waterways continue to improve.
Also, quite commonly in the news at the moment, cyanobacteria. Does this pose a similar health risk, and what are the causes of this is naturally occurring?
So cyanobacteria kind of in New Brunswick come in two kind of forms. So we have surface blooms. So those are what we see at the surface of the water. It's what we've seen like in Darlene's Lake, for example, recently here in the St. John area. But they also come as benthic mats, which grow on the bottom of waterways and look completely different from a surface bloom. So they come in two forms. And because of that, they kind of interact differently, look differently. So a surface bloom looks kind of traditionally what you would think of like a cyanobacteria bloom. It's bright green, can look like paint spilt on the water. But our benthic mats that grow on the bottom, actually, they're rarely the bright green. They might be a dark green, brown. They're slimy and, to use a not great word, snotty looking in the waterways. So they look very different. And because of that, there's also very different toxins seen in them. So our surface blooms more commonly contain a toxin called microcystin, which is a chronic liver toxin, can also cause like gastrointestinal or like skin issues as well. But for the long-term effect would be a liver toxin. And then in the benthic mats, we're seeing anatoxin A, which is a potent neurotoxin. So, if you remember in 2018 and 2019, some dogs died after being into the river in the Fredericton area. And that's what they had actually gotten into was the benthic mat and the anatoxin A, which as a neurotoxin shuts down your neuropathways. So is a lethal toxin. That being said, for human interaction, most people are unlikely to put random river things in their mouth. So getting a large hit of anatoxin would require being completely unmindful of what you're doing around the river. So don't want people to like panic over kind of the thought of that, but being mindful, making sure you're looking for cyanobacteria. If you do see signs of cyanobacteria, that's probably not the place to go swimming and recreating at the moment, and to make sure that you're reporting it so other organizations like ACAP or the province can come out and kind of take a look and confirm whether it is cyanobacteria or not. What I always recommend and what kind of the other watershed groups and province are kind of going towards is like a look before you leap kind of mindset to make sure that you are, when you're about to recreate in the river, when you're about to let your dog off leash to run around the river, is to make sure that you're looking for those signs of cyanobacteria. And if you are seeing signs of cyanobacteria or you're unsure, that's probably a good time to think about whether you're going to recreate there or let your dog off or to not swim in that area today. And then you can seek out more information. Or you can, if you do suspect it's a cyanobacteria bloom or a cyanobacteria benthic mat, you can contact your regional Department of Environment office and then they can go check it out as well. We at ACAP St. John monitor water quality throughout the greater St. John region. So we have 25 regular sampling sites that we do monthly. And then we produce a water quality report over the winter that generally comes out around World Water Day, which is March 22nd. So if you're interested in learning more about what our water quality is looking like, our last year's report is on the website and next year's report will be available in the winter, which will look at all of the data we collected this summer.
More information about ACAP St. John can be found at acapsj.org. This is Iona Coe for Local 107.3 FM and the Local Journalism Initiative.